Hello, and welcome to the Customer Onboarding Podcast brought to you by TaskRay. I'm your host, Jamie Cole, Chief of Staff at TaskRay. And on each episode, I'll sit down with customer onboarding leaders to uncover the leading strategies, playbooks, and secrets to ensuring customer onboarding success within the first 90 to 120 days. I'm so excited for you to join us and listen to these industry leaders as we learn together how to be customer onboarding gurus. It's my pleasure to welcome Stephen Poppy, Senior Manager of Customer Success at Label Insight, to discuss how onboarding teams can create human-centric onboarding processes, maintaining creativity while implementing processes, and more. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Can you give us a quick summary on what Label Insight does and your background in customer success?
Yeah, for sure. So, Label Insight, we are a technology company that has built a framework to allow retailers and CPGs to better tell stories to their consumers about the products they consume. So as you can imagine, we've all probably kind of been in the scenario of needing to shop for either a diet or an allergen or some kind of intolerance. And we've built the technology that enables retailers and brands to accurately reflect that information back to their consumers.
Very cool. And your background in customer success is at Label Insight, and then I'm assuming beyond that as well?
Yeah, so I kind of took a circuitous route to customer success. I started in banking before getting into construction as a project manager, and worked as a project manager for some high-end commercial building facilities for 7+ years before getting into customer success as a quote-unquote project manager. And then over the last 4 years, have kind of become a leader in that space, working for Label Insight, developing some processes and programs to scale our organization.
Very good. So you just briefly touched on this, but prior to your role in customer success, you held multiple positions as a project manager. How has that experience influenced your approach to customer success and onboarding specifically?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. In construction, it's obviously not called onboarding, but there's normally 12 to 18 months of planning that goes into a project before you ever really even set sight on the job site itself and start building. And, from design and pre-construction, all the different efforts that go into appropriately planning a building of any size, really gave me an appreciation for the need to appropriately plan to ensure success of a project. And so I think when I look at customer success, the parts of my background that I lean on are how can we appropriately orient our solution so that we ensure success of that solution in a customer's environment. And with construction, obviously, there's so many different variables that go into the success of a project. And so, the things that we look at from a customer success organization are, what are those variables? How can we plan for them? And how can we orient, again, our technology and our people in a way that is not only going to mitigate risk, but really deliver value in the most seamless way possible for our customers?
So looking at the onboarding process as a whole, I'm interested to learn more about how your team at Label Insight approaches this function.
Yeah, because of our technology, it requires a pretty involved implementation process. And as you can imagine, with retailers and CPGs, the ability to ingest data as a product requires a lot of different internal teams on our end to communicate all the different ways that it can be consumed effectively on the customer's end. And so when we look at onboarding, it really comes down to identifying who are the different teams and who are the users on the customer's end, and then orienting our project plan around that. So, really some of those key milestones that we look at are, one, the internal handoff from our sales team to our customer success organization. Ensuring that we're picking up on all of the sales context so that we're showing up day one really informed about why they bought our product. And then that second key touch point is obviously the kickoff, taking all of that context from the sales process and building out a kickoff approach that leverages that information to ensure that we start day one on a solid note. And then from there, you know, the next key touch point that we look at and focus some time on is the transition from the business team who's purchased the solution to the boots on the ground folks who are actually going to be using and implementing that solution. That's a really important touch point just because of ensuring that the why is transferred to that team as well as how. And so we use a lot of different tools, including obviously decks and presentations and one pagers to communicate some of that how, to ensure that that team really understands exactly how they can implement our technology effectively.
That part is, I find it to be the most fascinating part of the whole process, just because there's so many human variables in it. What do you think is the most challenging part of the communicating the why and the how, and what has surprised you as maybe being easier or simpler than you thought it would be?
Yeah, you know, I think with the why and the how, I think the understanding what motivates not only just different teams, but also different people is such a big part of that equation. Because I think when you look at organizations, at the end of the day, they're purchasing a product, your product, to solve a problem. And so to get to the core of that problem, you really need to understand that person. And so I think that's one of the elements that we've tried to get much better at, is rather than looking at, a customer as a logo, trying to really understand the persona behind the customer and the person that you're interacting with to understand what are their day-to-day issues that they're interacting with, and how do we orient our approach to ensure that they can really understand exactly how to use our technology effectively.
So you talked a little bit before about identifying, you know, the three key milestones within the onboarding process. So handoff to kickoff to then the transition to the end user. Does that differ from client to client? Do those three anchor the whole process?
Yeah, you know, I think we kind of break up our customers in tier based on, you know, their needs and size of implementation. And so, you know, we look at it from the standpoint of we've got our high touch customers, which are, you know, probably referred to as enterprise customers and other technology companies. And then we've got our lower touch customers and our tech touch customers. And we break it down that way so that we can identify the appropriate onboarding playbook depending on not only size of implementation, but also level of interaction that the customer really wants to experience and expects. You know, as you can imagine, if you were to purchase access to some kind of SaaS platform, depending on it, you may not want a human interface to walk you through exactly how to use it because it's so intuitive, right? Whereas if you have a number of different teams who are going to be consuming your product in a different way, it's really important to orient that kickoff in a way that is very human focused because of all of those different variables. So that's how we normally look at it, is new customer comes in, where are they fitting? And then within those different breakdowns, identifying what are the customer specific variables that we need to orient our playbook around.
So this is one of my favorite questions to ask, because this is a very hot topic. How does your team measure success and ongoing performance across the portfolio from a metrics perspective?
Yeah, you know, I think this is something that the last 12 months we've tried to get a lot better at. You know, I think we've definitely come from the days of implementation and onboarding focus to actually being looked at as a growth driver for the organization. And so, you know, as we've made that move, some of the KPIs we've focused in on are, you know, number of sales qualified leads that we're developing on a monthly basis. We look at, you know, churn in terms of ARR and revenue. And then we're also trying to get better at tracking time to value. You know, especially when you come to onboarding, the duration from purchase to experiencing value is such an important metric to track. And right now we're doing that in a way that is somewhat manual. And so we're trying to get a little bit better at creating some proactive triggers so that we can see customer X has gone beyond its intended time to value. We need to throw some resources and apply some resources there to address that. So that's a big one. Around user engagement, we track some things using Pendo in terms of new users and platform, monthly users in terms of how engaged they are in various feature sets depending on the solution they purchased. So those are some of the ones that come to the top of my mind. You know, I think in addition to that, when you look at customer health, we've got a mixture of subjective and objective kind of criteria that we analyze our customer community against. But again, that's probably another area where a lot of that is a little anecdotal, and we're in the midst of transitioning that to be a little more objective based.
Those are great metrics. I wanted to touch a little bit more on the first one you talked about. So the sales qualified leads so you're generating them from the onboarding function?
So our team, our team of CSMs will own a customer form from onboarding through. And during the life cycle of that customer, they have they're motivated and incentivized to drive growth. And so normally during that kickoff process, they'll identify what are some opportunities for growth. So, you know, depending on what they hear from the kickoff, the different needs that they're listening to from the various teams, they'll have some of those ideas of future upsell opportunities documented. And then as time goes and as they look for those opportunities to follow up on those, they'll create sales qualified leads around those to close them.
What are some of the core processes in your onboarding function that are integral to your overall strategy?
I think when you look at core processes for us, you know, some of those really entail the workflow between our internal teams. So we lean heavily on a number of different tools, including Jira, obviously, to communicate needs between customer and our product team. And I think we use a number of different tools as well to interact with our sales team in a similar function. So to kind of bubble that up to a process level, what we really do lean on is ensuring that our CSMs, when they show up at a customer, are properly informed with all the context they need to position our solution for success with that customer. And that includes being, you know, kind of the tip of the spear of Label Insight and having the backing and support of all of our different internal teams, so they're confident as they walk into that building.
I actually find it really interesting that you guys look at the CSMs as the tip of the spear, because I think a lot of times people look at it the opposite way, where sales is the tip of the spear. But I guess the one point I would love to dig in a little bit more is, are your CSMs responsible for onboarding, or is it a separate function or a separate team?
They do own onboarding. Yep.
Okay. Yep. So they get the handoff from your internal sales team or from your sales team internally, and then they start the onboarding process and then they transition. So the relationship really is with one person or a couple of people after the sale.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. And part of that process is, you know, that sales guy handing off not only context to the CSM, but also handing over the relationship. Yeah. And that's really a focus of the organization for the past 8 to 9 months, because we've realized that whenever we in the past haven't done that, and we've tried to maintain the sales ownership of that growth piece, there's rarely an opportunity for them to be as effective because the relationship, the day-to-day, isn't there. And so since we've transitioned this, we've seen huge growth in our ability to not only create opportunities, but also to close those opportunities associated with new solutions as well as growing existing. And so we think that's definitely a key element of our CSM strategy.
And so this was when I went to Pulse Europe in November, and this was one of the big topics of conversation, which was, do you have your CSM or customer onboarding teams, or if it's the same team doing it, delivering both quota carrying? So is that how they were structured from the beginning, or has this been a transition over the last 8 to 9 months, as you just mentioned?
Yeah, it's been a transition. And, you know, the whole organization was kind of named as project managers from the beginning, back in 2017. And so even the folks and the type of hires we were bringing in were more focused on implementation, project planning, organizing the project rather than really relationship management and positioning for future growth. And so it's been a real effort the past 6 to 8 months to try and reposition the group to these new focuses. And so our three focuses are, we manage churn, we drive growth, we create a world-class customer experience. And that's the focus of our whole team, and we've tried to create KPIs around each of those. And so in terms of quota, it's a mixture of, they're still salary based. There's spiff opportunities, but we have not kind of fully pivoted to that approach yet.
Yeah, because that was so what you just described, that situation, was how I think many people are finding themselves in this world, where they're like, okay, we've got this team of folks who are really outstanding at delivering a customer experience post-sale, whether that's onboarding, success, or some blend of the two, but we do want them to start driving that growth. And how do you either impart that skill set? How do you incentivize that behavior if that's not what they were doing before? And how do you make sure that they're still delivering an outstanding customer experience now that they have this other thing that they need to be doing?
Right. Yeah, it's a tough transition. And I think, you know, depending on your folks, not everyone is able to make that transition successfully, right? And I think part of it, like you said, is how do you orient your program so that incentives align with your expectations? And so that's a big component. I think the other side of it that we've thought about is, at the end of the day, if you have the type of people who are good with people, that is really a skill set that can scale beyond whatever expectations you have. And so I think when we look at that transition, I think it's almost better to come from the world of project manager to CSM relationship manager, at least when I look at it, rather than maybe coming from a sales background to a CSM, because I think every organization has a different approach to CS, but how we look at it is, you're not going to buy anything from me, you're not going to renew, you're not going to expand unless you trust my ability to deliver what you already purchased, right? And so we really focus on, we're not sales oriented. We just want to deliver value to you and your organization. And along the way, we want to make you feel great about the process. And if we do that, historically, it's proven that you'll want to continue to grow with us.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Great. So one topic that the world is dealing with broadly right now is how to deliver a human-centric experience to their communities as their different businesses and organizations are undergoing digital transformation. This problem is something that a lot of customer success managers have faced for some time. Why do you think it's important for business to not lose sight of the individual person behind day-to-day procedural interactions?
Yeah, it's really important. And I think we you know, briefly talked about this before. And, you know, it really comes down to, as soon as you look at business just through the lens of they're a new logo, they're new ARR, et cetera, as soon as you orient yourself around that approach, I think your ability to deliver value and really learn from your customers diminishes. And so what we've, you know, it's definitely a balance between doing that while at the same time leaning on technology to scale. And we're certainly at that intersection as well, which is I would love to have an unlimited amount of CSMs, but it's just not possible, right? And so, you know, what it comes down to for us is, you know, as it's one of the reasons we've oriented our customers in those different tiers, high touch, low touch, and tech touch, which is trying to identify what is the kind of human interaction that your customers do need and want. And once you do that, that can help you orient exactly the approach your CSMs can take. You know, for our tech touch customers, sometimes that interaction isn't happening on a monthly basis. It's happening maybe in a large scale email that is, you know, one to many. And that's exactly what that tech touch customer needs and is all the human interaction that tech touch customer wants, because their solution is an API and they already have it integrated and they don't really need much else. Whereas if there's another customer who's leaning on our technology for their day-to-day workflows and they're experiencing issues or want insights into various use cases, they want a weekly touch base or they want a biweekly sync of some variety to talk that through. And so within those tiers, we've tried to become really flexible at identifying, you know, not only based on our criteria, which one they fit in, but which one they want to be in. And so I think when we look at kind of, you know, what CS looks like for SaaS companies going forward, I think it has to be a mixture of the two. And I was at Pulse last year, and I think, you know, Nick did a great job kind of speaking to some of these truths. And we all interact with so much technology, especially, you know, in the age of coronavirus, where you don't go through the day without five different Zoom calls. But we interact with so much technology that when you have a human experience, it's refreshing, right? And I actually just had this the other day where I was returning a product I purchased, and I assumed I wouldn't interact with a human. And then someone reached out and was like, hey, was everything all right with that? And it was just like, oh, that's fantastic. I didn't expect that, but I really enjoyed that.
Yep.
And so that's what we also try to teach with our CSMs, is just be creative. There isn't, at the end of the day, you can't say every customer wants this, every customer needs that, and do this every time. And so we've tried to really lean into our personalities a bit and say, hey, I think this customer just needs a call today, and to allow for that kind of flexibility.
Hey, listeners, we'll get back to the show in a minute, but first I wanted to ask you a question. Is your handoff process between sales and customer success repeatable, scalable, and optimized around your customer outcome? Could your process use some work? Check out our webinar, Mastering the Post-Sale Handoff, available on our website at taskray.com. Let's get back to the show.
Yeah, especially with the times that we're going through right now. I agree. It is wonderful to know that people are looking out to help you during this time. So you talked about that the high touch, low touch, tech touch. Do you guys communicate with the customer up front really explicitly to this is what your onboarding and the cadence is going to look like? And if so, is there then, and let's say someone is in the tier, or you guys have segmented them as a tech touch customer, do they have the opportunity to buy into higher levels of onboarding or customer success ongoing as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. We don't make that explicit. And part of that is just because we kind of view the kickoff as kind of a requirements gathering phase, and we try and figure where we think they need to be at that point. And we don't We don't offer any kind of tiered onboarding services. Okay. And mainly that's because of, you know, our product being data, there's a certain level of involvement that is required of us just to administratively set them up for success. And so, you know, it's in our best interest to ensure that the first 60 days of our customer's life cycle is really intensive if needed. And so we normally kind of respond to the needs once we figure that out through the kickoff process.
So I'm fascinated to know, I actually studied food science in my college career. And so I find what you do really extra fascinating. What is the first, generally speaking, that aha moment or the time when someone reaches value? What is that for them?
Yeah, you know, sometimes it happens in the prospecting phase where we'll kind of talk through our origin story, where it was our co-founder's dad who had a heart attack and was put on a diet, and you know, the diet was low sodium, no trans fat, and something else. And they thought it would be easy enough to put together a recipe of foods based on those requirements. And little did they know, they realized that it was actually very hard to find all the different foods with just those two pieces of criteria. And so they started actually going into grocery stores and actually with a dictaphone, taking the ingredient nutrition statements of all the different products to try and analyze what products met those criteria so that they could actually feed their dad. And so when we kind of go through that and walk folks through what we've now built around that need, there normally is an aha moment. But that's like the initial one. And then they're like, okay, but what does that mean for my business? And so I think, you know, once we start to be able to translate that kind of transformational technology to how a retailer, say, can better allow me to search gluten-free whatever and I have an accurate list of products return instead of maybe a filtered list of six that only have gluten-free in the title, for that, for them, a lot of the business teams start to realize, well, what was I doing even before this technology? So the, on the retailer end, it's normally around that when they start seeing our technology built into their environment. And when we try, and as you can imagine, because that's so far ahead of time, right? Being able to deliver data and then see that data transposed and change in an e-commerce environment, there's so many different stages that happen before then. And so one of the things that we've tried to get better at is building out these value milestones so that we can communicate that you guys got through your data ingestion. Hey, you guys have your onboarding campaign for your own products from your supplier community. And so that we're breaking up that time to value in a little bit different chunks so that they're seeing value initially instead of having to wait, you know, 6 months.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's a really cool product. I mean, that is fascinating and wonderful. Process is necessary for any organization looking to scale and optimize successful strategies across their portfolio, and at the same time allowing opportunities for teammates to approach problems from a new perspective in order to innovate. How have your teams organized their processes to allow for both repeatable success and open creativity?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think this is a good TaskRate plug. And you didn't even position it for me. So I can do this honestly. I think one of the things that we've recently been doing is we've built a renewal workflow using TaskRate. And one of the things that we were lacking was consistency as it relates to some of the administrative steps that go into a successful renewal. And so we built out a renewal workflow in TaskRate with all of those renewal workflow steps dating back maybe 90 days. And then within that, once that project is created, that's handed off to the CSM to really tweak to the customized needs of that customer's renewal. So some are going to be more straightforward and they can go right by the template. Others are going to require budget validation with a variety of different teams, presentations, QBRs, EBRs. And so, you know, that's one way that we've leaned into the flexibility as well as consistency that TaskRay allows. But I think it's a huge need, because I think even as you scale, there's such a temptation to put guardrails around everything, because you want that ability to measure and forecast. But I think even when we talk back or think back to the human centricity of this, there's wonder in variability, right? And the ability to kind of let your personality dictate some different ways to approach a problem, I think is really beneficial. So we are in the midst of trying to strike that balance for sure.
That's great. Well, I'm glad to hear that TaskRay helped you do that. And whether it is TaskRay or not, I actually find it a fascinating thing that a lot of times when people think of creativity, they think of it as this wild, unbound thing. But a lot of artists actually have to be highly disciplined to be able to be creative. And I think that translates to business processes as well. Like, you don't have to be rigid, but there has to be like, hey, these are the steps. And then you can kind of add your unique flavor into the steps. And sometimes you stumble on something through that you realize should become a new step for everybody.
Yeah. I think that's a great point.
Yeah. And it's something that I think does help when you have a templated process that people can look at over and over.
Yeah, and I think part of that is making sure that the values of your organization, your CS team, are really widely known. You know, I think back to maybe 12 months ago when we were really charged with, you know, responsible for everything and nothing. You know, we owned the customer, but there was a really large sales presence in owning the relationship. And so what we really needed to do was to communicate internally what were our kind of guiding stars. And so when we talked about, hey, our guiding stars are going to be, we manage churn, we drive growth, and we create a world-class customer experience. And within each of these are some of the metrics that we're going to try and track our success here. That's when I really saw our team's ability to get creative within the guardrails that the organization had set. So I think it's a great point.
Good. So what do you think, what have you guys learned from some of those creativity experiments that has maybe guided the process, or vice versa, a process that has pushed creativity in one way or the other?
Yeah, I think the kickoff process in itself is one area that has experienced quite a bit of change. You know, we used to always go on site, and it was traditional that we would come in 2 hours, walk through a deck, and then, you know, kind of follow up with some meetings, and learn that works for a lot of customers, but it doesn't really work for all. And so this is one area where we started to identify, well, some implementations may just need an over the phone kickoff with a single point of contact, and then a follow-up meeting maybe later in person. And so we've made some quite a few changes to the kickoff process, trying to get that mix right. You know, I would say another would be the day-to-day management of these projects. I think we really used to be rigid around weekly meetings for every project, and then we started to loosen that as we realized, again, going back to, some customers don't need or want that. They've got a full schedule of things, and we've tried to flex that depending on their needs. So those are two that come to mind.
Great. So we've talked a lot about how developing the personal relationships have actually benefited your overall business in terms of being able to expand and retain customers. How have you guys seen those personal relationships help the customers themselves?
Yeah, I think for our customers who lean on our technology to be successful, One of the things I learned early in my career was, you know, when you're working with people, to the extent possible, you can highlight all the things that they're doing well. Their ability to be successful is much greater. And so I think when we look at our customers that we're interacting with personally, when we learn not only the problems they're trying to solve, but really what makes them tick, that enables us to orient our story around that and arm them with some stories around how they've won using our technology to better communicate that within the organization. I think the personal side of it also just helps our product get better. You know, I think there's a lot of different ways you can get product feedback. And I'm sure we've all seen the help desk ticket that comes in, which is like exclamation points and all in bold saying how terrible things are. And that's one way. But you know, another way is you get a call from one of your points of contact that says like, "Hey, I'm having a real issue here. You know, can you fix it?" And oh, beyond fixing it, I've got a number of teams who are interested in a different way to approach that feature. And you get down on, you get a call and you're able to really dig into how you can flex your product to make it better. And so I think between the spectrum of those two scenarios, the difference is one, you don't have a relationship and they're just using technology to submit a ticket. And because they don't feel like they need to call you or have that. And the other is you have a relationship. And so your product isn't just a piece of tech, it's an extension of you. And so the latter is obviously what we're really going for, and we don't always strike that, but, I think it really does mean the world when you're trying to build world-class technology.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And so how does your CSM team and your product team interface? Is there a process for that or a general cadence to feed that information from the customer facing team to the product team?
Yeah, there's the technology that we use, obviously, like Jira for tickets and communication around priorities. I think the thing that we've really tried to get better at is creating forums so that our product and our CS team can interact in a consistent cadence. And so we call them solution support teams. And it's essentially anyone within the org that touches a given product meets every 2 weeks, and CS brings customer feedback and stories and use cases. Product will come up and talk about the roadmap of features, how they're responding to various bugs. We've got a data strategy and solutions team that is talking about various ways that we're building attributes that is eventually going to become our product. And so it's a great forum for everyone to hear the different ways in which our internal teams ultimately touch customers, and then also to get that customer feedback directly to the people who are interacting, making our product better. So that's been one of the big wins of probably the last year or so.
Great. Fantastic. So I have one last question for you. If you had a piece of advice for customer onboarding leaders, what would it be?
You know, I would say really lean into your personality when it comes to that onboarding process. You know, I think, trust your hiring process and then trust your people. And if you're going to trust your people, then trust their personalities and let them lean into that so that the onboarding process is creative and fun and not boring. I think that's my advice.
That's good advice. Yeah, I would agree. That would make onboarding way more fun in general. If people have personalities. Well, great. I really appreciate your time today, Stephen. This was super informative and I love the product. So
yeah, thanks for having me, Jamie. This was fun.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you have questions, comments, or want to share your top learning from today's episode, tweet us at TaskRay. Or message us on LinkedIn. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave a review on iTunes and let us know your favorite part. Until next time, you've been listening to the Customer Onboarding Podcast brought to you by TaskRay, the customer onboarding success company.